against people of color and women in AI technology. So we've gone for like a pretty documentary heavy program this year, and the online film festival is the same kind of thing. It's a documentary program that explores the kind of intersections of art and the archives.
And you mentioned both, yeah, Coded Bias, directed by Charlene Kantaya, which investigates data feminism.
On 2SCR.
Have a conversation offline.
Don't have to drive a car if you can't.
Sydney's arts and culture show.
Flat Earth Society had this big conspiracy theory about
arts.
These kind of false idols.
On 2SCR 107.3.
Good morning and welcome to Carve, your weekly wrap-up and exploration into contemporary arts and culture in Sydney. My name's Lockie. Thank you for joining me on one of the best days of the year, Mardi Gras. Woo! What are you doing tonight, Sally?
Me? I'm going to a party.
Maybe you're going to the Mardi Gras at the SCG out there, which for the first time in its over 40-year history will not be held on Oxford Street, sadly. But before we start the show, we'd like to acknowledge the Gadigal people who are the traditional custodians of this land from where we are broadcasting. I'd also like to pay respect to the elders, past, present, and emerging of the Eora Nation. Sovereignty was never ceded.
What are you getting up to this week? The No Intermission Festival begins on the 17th of March at Chippen Street Theatre, and Lockie will be chatting to director and co-curator Rosie Niven about the mammoth task of putting on four shows in 2 weeks. Maybe you're checking out All About Women at the Sydney Opera House. Ellen chatted to the curator of the All About Women Film Festival, Kate Jinks, to find out all about the festival, so stick around to hear the chat after these songs.
The City of Sydney's grants and sponsorship program is now open, offering financial and in-kind support. Do you have a project that will build social, cultural, environmental and economic outcomes for our city? For details or help with your application, visit cityofsydney.nsw.gov.au/grants or call 02 9265 9333. City of Sydney sponsors 2SER 107.3.
SER's weekly email newsletter is your guide to everything that's happening at 2SER. It's your chance to win exclusive prizes, links to on-demand highlights, and to find out what's coming up on your favourite radio station. Sign up to 2SER's weekly newsletter now at 2SER.com.
Apologies, listeners. We are experiencing some technical difficulties in the studio today, but we'll go straight on to one of our pre-recorded interviews. All About Women in Film is on tomorrow at the Sydney Opera House. From feminist revolutionaries to filmmaking firsts, All About Women in Film exhibits groundbreaking feminist stories by local and international filmmakers. Ellen sat down with the curator of the program, Kate Jinks, to discuss this year's lineup.
Kate, thank you for joining us on Carve.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So you have curated All About Women in Film, which includes work by artists, archivists, storytellers and history makers who create our culture. What inspired the rationale for this year's program?
Yeah, well, last year was the first year that we did film as part of All About Women. I was invited by the head of Talks and Ideas, the festival director, Edwina Throsby, to bring some ideas about what kinds of films could be involved in the program. And we did two screenings. We did Gillian Armstrong's Starstruck, and then we played Thelma and Louise with a full hour-long breakdown panel about that film that was just great.
Amazing.
And so Edwina was really keen to expand it this year, and I wanted to do something a little different. We've got two films screening and a one-hour talk this Sunday. We're screening Brazen Hussies, the documentary by Catherine Dwyer about the Australian women's liberation movement in Australia, and Coded Bias, which is this fascinating documentary from the US by Shalini Kantaya about the inherent biases against people of colour and women in AI technology. So we've gone for like a pretty documentary heavy program this year, and the online film festival is the same kind of thing. It's a documentary program that explores the kind of intersections of art and the archives.
And you mentioned both, yeah, Coded Bias, directed by Shalini Kantaya, which investigates data feminism and algorithmic justice. Why is this film one not to miss?
Oh, God, it is so good. It screened at the Melbourne International Film Festival last year, and it's just one of those films that I really want more people to see. It is this quite shocking documentary. It's about this MIT scientist, Joy Bellarmine, and she was just doing a research program, like a research project one day, and she was doing this, what she thought would be a fun kind of project where she could work with AI, facial technology in a mirror setting. And she realized that it would not pick up her skin. She's a Black American woman. And she started looking into who makes AI facial recognition software. And I mean, no spoiler alert needed. It's white men. Shocking, right?
Yeah.
And so she kind of goes through all these different avenues, working out how AI technology has really become a massive, massive part of all of our lives, even though we don't really think so. And the director, Shalini Kantaya, looks at how it's being used across the world by a lot of kind of government and policing agents, and yeah, the inherent biases that come with technology that is not meant to recognize, you know, it only recognizes very fair skin and mostly men. So there are a lot of people being, you know, put away and being fined and imprisoned because there are all these problems with facial technology. It's just like not, it's just not good enough. And there's a talk about a very similar subject by Kate Crawford also at All About Women this Sunday. So I thought that there would be a great double act.
Yeah, it's super fascinating stuff. Definitely with COVID, I feel like we've given up our privacy really easily, like always scanning into QR codes around the place. And yeah, I'm really excited to see this one.
Yeah, look, it will make you want to put your phone down, I will say, and maybe tape up the little camera thing on your laptop. That said, I thought that when I first saw it and I was quite paranoid. And now, you know, look at me scanning into everything and like using Face App, etc. So it'll be a good one for me to revisit too.
Totally. And yeah, you mentioned you were also screening Brazen Hussies, directed by Catherine Dwyer, which tells the story of the bold Australian women who ignited a feminist revolution during the women's liberation era. So what is the power of documentaries for evoking change?
I think that, you know, it's that whole thing of if you don't look at your past, you're doomed to repeat it. Mm. I think that there is this great groundswell of documentaries right now about various liberation movements that have been happening mostly in the latter part of the last century. And they're so important for us to be revisiting these archival materials, essentially. So with like women's liberation movement or like the Black liberation movement or queer liberation movements, you know, this was all happening before the internet. And I think that quite a lot of people would feel, or maybe younger people my age might feel, that we're in a really good place in a lot of those areas. And where, you know, I would beg to differ, but I think it's just really, really important to revisit those liberation movements and see what those people were coming up against, how it was recorded, if it was recorded. And, you know, like we've made so much political change quite recently, but yeah, I think it's just very important to see how it all started and to basically give credit where it's due in a lot of those ways, but also see what we're building on and what we can build towards. Yeah, I think it's very, very important. And this one is an incredible documentary. I think that anyone who sees it, especially women, will feel a new kind of respect for the women that came before us, and also that there is just so much left to do. I think we're all feeling that this week in Australia, I have to say, as well. So I hope that this is a call to arms, this screening.
Beautiful. And the program also features four short documentaries from Australian filmmakers. What sort of stories are being told this year?
Yeah, so that's for the online program. So all happening on Sunday is screenings of Coded Bias and Brazen Hussies, and then there's also a panel discussion, first and last. But on the as part of the online film festival, which is the first time we've ever done it at the Opera House, as part of All About Women, and I am just so excited to be given that opportunity there. We've got screening Coded Bias, Brazen Hussies online, as well as Essie Coffey's My Survival as an Aboriginal, an incredibly important document and something to revisit right now. It's a wonderful, wonderful film. It's been restored by the National Film and Sound Archive. And then on top of that, we've got four short films, all made by filmmakers and artists and archivists, academics. They're sort of films that you wouldn't often see, I suppose, in a film festival or a short film festival program, but they really deserve to be there. There's a great, great film by Serena Masuko, who's one of my guests last year, called Polychromatic, and that looks at the challenges of emerging curators in Australia, and it looks at four specific curators in Australia and how they are navigating these, you know, very, very white art spaces, and it looks at the need for more kind of diverse curators in Australia and worldwide. We've got Pia Borg's Demonic, which I love this movie. It's a short film. It goes for about half an hour, and it looks at the satanic panic that happened in the 80s in US and, of course, worldwide, but it uses these incredible archival video interviews and audio interviews, as well as this very unsettling CGI. It's really great. And then we've got Opening Night, The Order of Arrangements by Diana Maker Smith and Veronica Tello. And that looks at the opening night of a national art museum and the IGA and how it what happened on that day and recreates certain things that happen and looks at women's roles within art and in the archives, and looking at the, you know, the way that women work within an institution, perhaps not in the top sort of positions or the showy positions, but they're kind of infiltrating through the rest of the gallery. It's a really incredible film that uses a lot of recreations. It's so beautiful, so beautifully shot.
Wow.
And then also got The Women in the Car by Kate Blackmore, which revisits the incredible short film This Woman Is Not a Car from 1982 that was made by Margaret Dodd. And that's that film, if you haven't seen it, it's basically about men objectifying women and love of Holden cars. It's so great. it's a great feminist piece. And so in this film that was made a couple of years ago, Kate Blackmore talks to Margaret in a car and talks to her about the position that she was in when she made that film and the importance. It's really great. So that all these films I see intersecting, like art, archives, recreations, and documenting things that have slipped through the cracks, basically, which is what I'm really interested in as a programmer. Yeah.
Yeah, a very diverse and interesting show lined up, and it's available for 2 weeks, right? You can stream it whenever.
Wild, isn't it? Yeah, so that online program is available from 7th to the 14th of March. You just pay one ticket and you can access everything. And yeah, the last thing I want to mention was that this panel on Sunday, I think, will be an absolute hoot. It's called First and Last. And I've asked Ione Skye, iconic US yes. actress Ione Skye, who happens to be in the country, Mira Falk, the amazing Australian director, she made Judy and Punch, and Kumin Liu, who's the director of content for Netflix Australia New Zealand. So we're going to be talking about different things that have happened in their lives, you know, as people who are working in the screen industry from all different sides of it, but also about like the movies that inspired them or angered them or and to talk about different things that have happened to them on the job. So I think it will be so, so fascinating. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I heard that you'll be sharing some personal thirsts.
Yeah, we're going to really get into it. You know, I'm going to be asking them about, you know, the first times that they experienced certain things on set, whether they felt in control or, you know, experiencing sexism or being kind of, you know, like there aren't the ratio of men to women in the screen industry is still pitiful. And a lot of these, you know, these women have been working in those industries for quite a long time and in different ways. So I think it'll be interesting to get those thoughts and stories bubbling up about different things that are happening both in Australia and the US, because, you know, Ione is so connected to the American film industry. You know, like, you know, her first film was River's Edge, where she starred opposite like Keanu Reeves, and wow. She's worked with so many different incredible actors and filmmakers. Yeah.
Awesome. And I saw one of the questions might be, which film changed the world? And my final question is, Kate, which film changed your world?
Oh, God, which film changed my world? I don't know. Look, the film that I really love is Gillian Armstrong's Starstruck. That made me change the way I thought about Australian cinema. But the film that I kind of love the most is probably Celine and Julie Go Boating. It's a Jacques Rivette film from the 70s. And it blew my mind so much that the first time I watched it, the people I were with left the cinema.
Oh, my God.
And I felt terrible staying in there. I was like, I should probably go with them.
Seriously.
And then I actually went back 2 days later and watched it again and then became absolutely obsessed with it. It really kind of changed the way I thought about what cinema can be and about what women's roles on screen can be as well. So, yeah, that and probably Desperately Seeking Susan. I love that movie.
Well, it's one to put on the recommendation list for sure. Kate, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Ellen was just speaking with Kate Jinks, curator of All About Women in Film Festival, which is on tomorrow at the Sydney Opera House. If you prefer to stream from home, you can purchase the entire program for $30 to watch at your leisure. Purchase your tickets at sydneyoperahouse.com.
This week on Death of the Reader, it's an all-out assault on the classics.
Hercule Poirot?
Is that a liquor?
Silly would sis that the tales of Sherlock Holmes are foolish.
I didn't say I disliked him. I just said that BBC Sherlock hadn't aged particularly well.
Soji Shimada revolutionised the genre, and we're covering his Tokyo Zodiac Murders, 9 p.m. on Sundays, 7:30 p.m. on Thursdays, and on all your favourite podcast apps. Your Murder Mystery World Tour, here on 2SER.
Want to get a special, limited edition 2SER t-shirt?
Of course you do.
Sign up to 2SER as a passionate subscriber and we'll throw one in the mail for you.
You'll also get a subscriber card, a sticker for your car, fridge or laptop, and the latest issue of our Listening Post magazine.
Subscribe today at 2SER.com.
We have a very special treat for you this morning. If you haven't been to the theatre in a while, our Carve live performance might just scratch that itch. Evan George Komfos is an actor and writer living and working in Sydney. A current student of WAPA, Evan has trained at NIDA and the Atlantic Acting School in New York. This morning, Evan will be performing a new monologue live for your ears. Evan will perform his piece Black Dogs Blue with stage directions read by me. This has a language warning. Lights come up on Angel sitting on a chair, staring at a spot on the ground a few feet in front of him. There is a live plant in a pot next to him. A person enters with one of those little paper cups that hold a patient's medication. The person hands the paper cup to Angel. He tosses the pills back. The person shines a penlight into his mouth. The pills are under his tongue. He closes his mouth and quickly repositions the pills to the top of his tongue. He opens his mouth again, revealing the empty chamber where the pills were hiding. The person leaves. He spits the pills out into his hand. He walks to and buries them in the pot plant. He admires the intricacy of the leaves, the life in them.
Have you ever heard of learned helplessness? It's when someone becomes so used to facing uncontrollable and stressful situations that they lose all hope of exercising control. They've learnt they are helpless and no longer try to change it, even when change is possible. Scientists tested this on dogs. You put a dog in a cage that has an electrically charged mesh floor. You continuously electrocute the dog until it accepts this as its fate. It can't get out, so it just takes it, shock after shock. What does the poor thing think? This is my life now? I'll die in this cage that stings.
Scratches neck, transforms. Angel's physicality changes to that of an animal. Angel the dog.
I've been feeding my plants my pills for a week. It looked sick and tired, and that's what we do. We look after each other. He gives me airs. I give him pills. Two big ones for the voices, two for depression. 1,000 milligrams of quetiapine, 80 of paroxetine. They all end in peen or teen. Fluoxetine, depoxetine, vortioxetine. Peen, teen, peen, teen, peen, teen, peen, teen. Pine or tine? To pine over something is to suffer a mental or physical decline, and tine is a prong or a sharp point. So you take a quetiapine to remedy a mental or physical decline, and then a paroxetine to stop the sharp pronging pain everywhere. Is that the etymology of those words?
Angel notices the audience.
What are you doing here? They didn't tell me you were coming. Why didn't they tell me you were coming?
He holds his pot plant.
Stop calling me that. My name is Angel. I told you. You're not listening. I told you years ago. Stop pretending that I didn't. Why can't you just be happy for me? Accept me as Angel. I'm Angel. I didn't choose to be Angel. I was born Angel. Stop saying it's my choice. I'm not doing this to hurt you.
Transform.
I felt Angel inside me for a long time. For as long as I can remember. People stigmatize him, ostracize him, say he's a threat. A threat to the people around him, a threat to their way of life, a threat to everything and everyone except himself. They muzzle him. Drug him up, sedate him, put it in their system so every time he sees a doctor, they form an idea of him without even really knowing him. He's never tried to hurt anyone, but he feels like he's been treated like he has. He just wants to be himself. He wants to be Angel. Why is that a threat? A threat to what? The norm? Why are we so hung up on the norm still? Angel saves me. He's a part of me. He's who I've been hiding from the world. He's who I've been conditioned to hate. Politics, religion, wasps, colonizers, hate, uniform, patriarchy, parents, boys will be boys, successful boys, white boys, business boys, boys in suits, boys with a Rolex, R.M. William boots, boys in trucks with a sticker of Greta Thunberg being fucked from behind. Not all men.
Transform.
I can detect judgment with my powerful sense of smell. There's a bit, but it's not too pungent. Outside, it's pretty strong. It depends on where you are, really. Some places, it's so strong. Art galleries, audiences of theatres, theatre companies that charge $120 a ticket, places of worship, private schools. Others, you can barely smell a thing. I was in an area once where the smell was particularly pungent and someone in a car screams out, "Mutt!" I chase the car. Woof, 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 woof. I run as fast as I could. All fours were working like a perfectly programmed machine. Galump, galump, galump. Muscle, blood, bone, sinew working in unison. I am designed to go. The car got away, leaving a trail of stench.
Transform.
I left it. I thought about it for 2 days. Question after question. Why would they say that? Why go out of their way to hurt me? What's wrong with me?
Transform.
Nothing is wrong with you. You're amazing. You're being who you're born to be.
Transform.
But I bother other people.
Transform.
Fuck them. Life's too short. If they want to spend their time screaming hate out of a machine that can outrun you, then let them go. They're weak. You're strong. You're a wolf.
Transform.
Yeah, you're right. You're totally right, Angel. Accept and change. Accept and change. You're my guardian, Angel.
Transform.
I'm your best mate.
Hugs himself. Evan George Comfos, thank you so much for joining Carve this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
This piece is incredibly personal. Was it informed by past experiences?
I definitely think that with, you know, most writing and most art, there's definitely some sort of connection to the producer, the artist's personal experience. For me, this piece definitely has moments of truth with myself, especially probably the last 6-7 years, dealing with mental health issues, you know, putting myself in really dark places, well, getting into really dark places and then sort of keeping myself in those dark places, in a sort of, as I mentioned in the monologue, a learned helplessness. So it definitely... my personal experiences definitely feed into this piece, especially with, you know, experiences of being on medication and feeling like an intruder, really, in society. And, you know, that I just feel really, really alone sometimes.
In the monologue, your character becomes a dog. What led you to this? Why were you interested in exploring the happy and excitable nature of dogs?
I love dogs.
Me too.
I have a chocolate Labrador named Wilson, and you know, when I'm just around him, I'm sort of just studying him and just always so interested in how he can, you know, just be sitting there and then you just approach him a particular way and his tail would just start wagging. It's like as if he can sense something. And so yeah, I really wanted to express that, and like when I'm performing it, I'm always sort of thinking about him. Which is the best thoughts to have. And also, like, you know, just people, like, it's always been referenced, the you know, the black dog being depression and a feeling of emptiness. So I wanted to, yeah, sort of incorporate that as well.
Yeah. I know it's funny, the metaphor is always this black dog, but all the dogs I know are like totally happy and excited to be around. I mean, dogs do get very anxious sometimes, but lots of dogs, yeah, they bring such a positive presence into people's lives.
Totally.
The piece is heavily centered around mental health and feeling like the character bothers other people, which you sort of touched on before. So what emotions is the character dealing with, and why do you think it's important to put these on stage?
I feel like the emotions at the, like, the forefront would probably be like this feeling of having, like, feeling like you have to make yourself smaller, for the people around you,
And so, like, you're completely codependent on, like, everyone else and, you know, making sure that they're happy. You're really putting yourself behind all of that. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's his sort of the character in this monologue. He's sort of on the cusp of breaking free from those pressures and really, like, understanding that, yo, life is short and there's only probably one chance at it. Mm. It's so important just to, like, be selfish at times. Don't be an asshole.
No.
But, like,
look after yourself.
Look after yourself and you know, be yourself and stop minimizing yourself and your achievements and who you are just to make other people comfortable. Because really, like, that's their problem. It doesn't have to be yours. I definitely think that over, like, I don't know, the last 10 years, views of mental health have gotten much better and people are much more open to listening and also educated and educating themselves. But I just still feel there's still a little bit, maybe not even a little bit, but at times I feel society's still quite backwards.
Well, in the monologue you say, for as long as I can remember, people stigmatise me, ostracise me, say that I'm a threat. So, yeah, even though there are all these programs and people are much more open about mental health these days, you still can't help feeling like you don't belong or you sit on a outside of society.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really important message.
Yeah, totally.
For audiences to understand. The protagonist in the piece, it's called Angel. Mm. And when I read the monologue for the first time, I was reminded of Tony Kushner's famous play Angels in America. So I was wondering what theatre inspires your work?
Mm. Well, first of all, Angels in America is one of my favourites. But what... this is a hard question. I really enjoy self-devised stuff. I've been living in Perth for the last 3 years and been visiting a theatre out there called Blue Room. And it puts on a lot of self-devised stuff and self-written and self-performed things and, you know, independent and... That stuff really inspires me because it's just so raw and so raw and and
organic. It's
organic,
not all sort of curated and there's not the fancy lights and the fancy projections.
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, don't get me wrong, I still love some classics and, you know, the new ways that they're being translated onto stage. Yeah, there's a special place in my heart for the self-written work that, you know, you assume that the person who's written it and is presenting it has probably felt these things before.
I recognize that it's hard out there for actors. I think the industry is slowly changing too because we've got all this new work and money coming from overseas, but as a young actor, I wanted to ask you, if any of our listeners are thinking of, you know, embarking on a career in acting, do you have some advice, any tips, tricks?
This is a hard one. Just obviously try so hard. Like, you need to put every piece of yourself into the work and really delve deep into it all. If it's your thing to study... I would say, you know, do a 3-year course at, you know, one of the schools we have here in Australia. I definitely look into that. I don't know if this was a misconception, but I went into it thinking like I needed that. It would be good to get that stamp of approval from one of these institutions. Mm. It'd be a great thing on the resume. That's definitely not, like, needed, but I just thought that it was something that I wanted. I felt like I'd feel more, more stable and stronger with that degree. But of course, like, you know, it's definitely been done where, you haven't had a formal 3-year full-time training.
Yeah.
Like it can definitely be done, but I needed that that discipline.
Yeah.
So yeah, if I'd recommend, you know, doing a 3-year course if that's doable, and yeah, just surrounding yourself with supportive people, and you know, keep on telling yourself every day that you know you're gonna shine no matter what.
Mm.
'Cause it's hard, like full of rejection, full of you know, hard times, and if you love it, you know, you'll persevere.
Oh yeah, that's what we do in the arts. Keep going. And what's next for you, Evan George Compos? Anything, any projects on the horizon? Can we see you anywhere?
No, I'm not really, no. So I need to go finish.
It's hard out here.
I need to go finish my degree, actually. I've got one semester left, so I'll be traveling to Perth in July to finish that off.
Then you got your stamp of approval.
Get my stamp of approval, yep. And then when I'm out of there, you'll see me on the big screen.
Oh, I can't wait.
Probably not.
no, definitely. We'll put you up there.
Yeah. So that's in the not too distant future.
Mm.
Just finishing off that course.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining Carve Live this morning. We really enjoyed having you on as our first theatre piece, first monologue.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. It was a fun experience.
I've just been speaking with Evan George Compos, who performed his monologue Black Dogs Blue on Carve. If you like his writing, hit him up at Evan George Compos on Instagram. Show Evan some love. Sorry, it's at EvsCon. If you're interested in performing on Carve, slide into our DMs at Carve2SCR or email me, SallyMackenzieLewis @gmail.com.
The Bands Next Door returns to the stage on Saturday, March 27 at the Botany View Hotel, with three locally sourced bands serving up a platter of alternative Australiana. Catch the sentimental folk rock sounds of Casual Fan, the melodic pop fuzz of Sashay, and the bruised and battered life lessons of Marilyn Maria. Doors open from 7:30 with free entry all night. Get down early to secure your spot. Presented by 2SER and the Botany View Hotel.
Tune in on Monday the 8th of March as 2SER celebrates International Women's Day.
The No Intermission Festival is a four-show festival being put on at the Chippen Street Theatre by Theatre Travels Productions, opening on March 17 and closing on March 27. I now have the pleasure of being joined in the studio by co-curator of the festival and director of Rattling the Keys, Rosie Niven. Hello, Rosie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me in the studio today on Carve.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, I've got you in here today to promote the No Intermission Festival, which is a theatre festival of four plays being put on by Theatre Travels Productions, which you are part of as a producer, director. Explain your role, isn't that? Sorry. Explain your role.
No, so it's a pretty large role. I'm the co-curator of the festival.
Yeah, that's right. Cool.
So my co-curator, Carly Fisher, and I, we sit down and we receive all of the scripts. I think, God, we received hundreds for the last submission, which is exciting because the festival's only in its second year. But we received hundreds from across the world. So we sift through those and we decide which ones we think would be the best fit as a sort of part of the No Intermission family. So I do that, and I'm also directing one of the shows. I'm directing Rattling the Keys.
Cool. Let's go through the four shows, I think maybe by weeks, because if we just go all four at once, then it'll just be a lot to take in. Week one is running from March 17 to 20 at Chippen Street Theatre, which the whole festival is at.
Mm-hmm.
And that features Rattling the Keys, the one you are directing,
yes,
by Zoe Muller, and In Their Footsteps by Ashley Adelman. Rattling the Keys, also, we should mention, I also happen to be performing in, so it's very exciting.
Such a coincidence.
It's very exciting. Yeah, but it's a complete coincidence, so I'm very excited to be interviewing my director. Yeah, talk a little bit about those shows in week one and what people can expect.
Cool.
Those.
So we run two shows a night, so the exciting thing about week one is that if you come for both shows in an evening, it's such a varied experience. In Their Footsteps is an American piece. It's a verbatim work, which means that it's taken from interviews with real people. So five women who were involved in the Vietnam War were interviewed about their experiences and how women are often forgotten in the war. Specifically in the Vietnam War, there were so many women that were involved in various capacities, and they were just as affected by what happened. They treated the victims. They were affected by Agent Orange. They had there was generational problems after Agent Orange that affected them as well. But they're largely forgotten. If you look at the Vietnam War memorials, very, very few women are listed on there, even though there were so many that were involved. So Ashley Edelman and Infinite Variety Productions went and interviewed these five incredible women and put their interviews together into this fantastic play. And so it just, it gives you a really fantastic idea of what the Vietnam War looked like for women and how horrific it was. Because I think when you think about the war in that way and Vietnam War and maybe what you studied or what depictions you've seen, you don't actually think about female involvement. So I'm very, very excited about that one. Unfortunately, as good as the pitch I just made is, it is completely sold out.
So, yes, I would love to keep talking more about it, to be honest, but we've got shows to get through, Rosie. We've got shows to get through.
Sorry, which I'll be I'm more
sure.
Efficient.
No, no, that's all right. I'm sure not just on this show, but at the moment in your life, there's shows to get done.
There's a lot of shows to get done.
So if I were to book a ticket to In Their Footsteps and then that same night go see Rattling the Keys, how would my experience differ?
Oh, God.
How would my mood change?
I mean, they're both pretty grim, but in a good way.
Yeah.
In Their Footsteps is quite an empowering piece. I would say it's quite a feminist work looking at how tough these women were throughout the war. And, you know, there is this beautiful, sad moment. I don't want to ruin the ending, but there are beautiful, sad moments where you sort of remind yourself that as much as you're watching characters, they are real people. So that's quite shocking to see the photos and the names of the women that were actually part of the Vietnam War. Rattling the Keys is an absolute roller coaster. So if you come to, I mean, even if you just come to Rattling the Keys, that's a roller coaster in itself. But if you come to both in one night, your emotions are going to be rattled. But in a fantastic way. I want to stress that.
Yes, in a fantastic way.
Exactly.
Can confirm.
Exactly. Rattling the Keys is quite a dark work that looks at drug addiction in rural Australia and people who from different backgrounds who haven't had the best opportunities and sort of like a melting pot of bad experiences and what happens when that's all turned up to 100 and where they can go from there and how they can drag themselves out of these negative experiences.
With Rattling the Keys, we'll sit on that one for a sec since you are directing it and since I am performing in it. I guess with such a young cast and such a diverse group of people, how's it been for you directing a group that really is quite, I guess, similar in age to yourself?
It's pretty exciting. I really like working with younger actors because there is this amazing sort of I'm just sort of moving my hands around the thing.
This is an audio medium.
I know. I'm so used to using my hands. There's this great energy and passion and vibrancy that comes with working with a young cast, which I'm sure comes with working with older casts as well. But everyone sort of gets into the room and is like, all right, let's go. Rehearsal started 30 seconds ago. What are we doing today? Which intense scene are we doing? You want me to roll on the ground? It's happening right now. I'll do a flip if you want. And those sort of bold offers are really exciting, especially in a piece like this that requires such intense dialogue and such intense emotions.
Yeah, I think it might have been a direct quote from me at some point in that.
That was definitely you.
Yeah. Let's talk about week two, which plays March 24 to 27, also at Chipin Street Theatre. And this one features Girl, Shut Your Mouth by Geeta Bizard and Lipstick by Lane Stanley.
Yes. So Girl, Shut Your Mouth by Geeta Bizard it actually came straight from Adelaide Fringe Festival. When I say straight from, it was the last one before COVID. So it was the 2020 Adelaide Fringe Festival where we had a fantastic run. It was a 5-star run, which I was stoked to stage manage and assistant direct. That one's directed by Carly Fisher, and it's this incredible, very dark. Dark seems to be a theme across our festival. Yeah. It's a very powerful feminist piece about what women will do to get out of that darkness, to get out of those horrible places.
Yeah. And Lipstick by Lane Stanley.
Lipstick is not dark. Lipstick.
Yes.
Yay. Lipstick is the lightness in our festival. Cool. It's something that we were really excited to add to the festival because we've never – had a queer farce as part of our repertoire. And so it's very silly and so much fun. And every rehearsal I've sat in on that one for is, it's an absolute riot. If you don't know what a farce is, it's people hiding under the couch and the audience can see, but no one else can. And people jumping out of doors. It's incredibly chaotic, but it's about identity and learning to come to terms with yourself and accepting who you are. It's very, very positive, and I really enjoy that piece.
Speaking about the festival as a whole, and I guess we try to avoid it, but I feel like you got to in arts interviews, we got to touch on the COVID effect and the fact that this festival was scheduled to go ahead as an eight-show festival. Eight-show festival.
Ten-show would kill me.
I know, yeah. So I'm sorry I even suggested it. An eight-show festival back in April 2020. It's been postponed and suspended about four times, and finally it's going to get on stage. For you as a co-curator, how much of a relief or, I guess, yeah, how exciting is it to finally get these shows on stage?
There is a huge relief. We cast these shows in December 2019. So majority of the actors and the crew have been with us since then. So it's been a huge roller coaster for us, not knowing if it was going to go ahead, and the disappointment when we had to postpone and then we didn't know if the new dates would even work. And we're so close now that fingers crossed nothing can happen because it opens in 2 weeks. But it's fantastic not only to be able to get these shows on stage, but to see the audience response coming out of COVID and how hungry people are to re-engage with theatre. That's what's been really exciting to both me and Carly, and I think everyone working within the festival, is the response to us coming out with four. I mean, they're all, we work with emerging artists, so these are four new works. They've all been written in the past few years. And to see audiences go, yes, I'll absolutely come to this new work. I don't know what it's about, but I'm excited and I want to support emerging artists. And that's definitely been the most exciting part for us.
Awesome. I'm excited to see the other shows in the festival. I'm excited to perform in Rattling the Keys.
I'm glad.
That is a relief, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge
I'm excited
relief.
About it. And if anyone wants to buy tickets to any of the shows that we said, week one is March 17 to 20, Rattling the Keys and In Their Footsteps at Chipping Street Theatre. And week two, March 24 to 27, Girls Shut Your Mouth and Lipstick. And you can get tickets at theatretravels.org/no-intermission. Or you can follow on Instagram, Theatre Travels Prod. Are there any other socials to plug, or is that a good point to
either
point
Theatre
people
Travels
to?
Prod or just regular or theatre travels? We tend to cross promote about across both of our pages, so either is fine.
Excellent. Thanks for coming in, Rosie.
Thank you so much for having me.
I was just speaking there with Rosie Niven, the co-curator of No Intermission Festival and director of the festival's opening play, Rattling the Keys.
Lockie, there is so much to check out in Sydney this week. Mardi Gras, well, one of them.
Yep.
But did you know our very own Carve producer and presenter, Ellen, is currently showing a window exhibition at Join the Dot Studio?
Oh, my God. That's what she's been talking about.
Where is she?
It all makes sense. The dots are being joined.
Yes.
The dots are finally being joined.
That has manifested in your mind.
Yes.
The work is a video installation which explores everyday surroundings within the COVID-19 landscape, with technology as a necessity for not only connection, but everyday COVID-19 safety. Have you checked in? Our longing for digital privacy has been overlooked by our craving for intimacy. The curators and artists, Ellen and Thea, invite the onlooker to become part of the performance piece when they walk by. So check it out at 102 Victoria Road, Marrickville, and show Ellen some love.
And just before we end the show, I just massive shout out to Evan George Confos, our first Carve Live monologue. It's phenomenal. Let's get Evan in here for a sec. I'm just going to quickly leave the studio for a sec so Evan can come in. Hey, Evan, sup?
Hey, hi. I just want to say big happy birthday to my oldest friend, Liv.
Ah,
yeah.
Born on Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
A queer icon is born.
True. So
happy birthday, Liv.
Happy birthday, Liv.
We'll see you at your party tonight at 123 Fake Street, Newtown. That's a shout out. Obviously, COVID restrictions will be in place, but please wear your best Mardi Gras outfit.
Bring a plate, please. It's a potluck.
That's right.
And that's the show today. Thank you for listening. As we're always, we'll put the details for everything we've covered on today's show on our website, 2ser.com/carve-arts. Don't forget to follow our Instagram, at carve2ser. Have a wonderful Mardi Gras. We'll catch you next week.
Happy Mardi Gras, fam.
Yes.
Listening to 2SER 107.3 FM, DAB, on demand, live stream, and app.
Yo, what's up? This is Polo Boy. I'm here with Mick Jones. We send our love to you, Karen. Power to the people. Back song.
wonder how we got here. Wonder how we got here. I wonder how we ended up tearing everything apart. Maybe we should stop here.
Maybe we should stop here. We should stop here.
Tell me, what do you need? If it's blood, I will bleed. If you want me to leave, I will leave. Farewell.